Before we get started with today's podcast, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, Sports with Katie Nolan. It's a weekly show about sports and all the things tangentially related to sports. Its friends would describe it as curious, fun, and a podcast. Weekly guests include sports fans from all sorts of industries, comedy, film, television, science. So be sure to check that one out. Download, subscribe to Sports and the Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, baseball team in Cleveland changed their names. We'll also talk about Keontae Johnson, the basketball player at Florida in a medically induced coma. And we'll be wrapping up the baseline series with Myron Metcalf talking about the prep to pro pipeline in basketball. But first. All right, Gabe, we record this here on Tuesday morning. Sometimes I feel like it's important to point that out to give people context to know like what's on our minds as things are going on. And I guess I have to ask you the question. Do you think Lamar Jackson had to boo-boo in the game? And that's why he had to run to the back and then come back out?
The part of the video that really did it for me was not him running down the hallway, but when he went to go through the door.
Yes, yes.
And there was someone coming the other way.
Yes.
And he's like, man,
get the F out of the way right now. Yes, that was what drove me over the top also, that he did, in fact, have to go boo-boo. Right. It was that way. Watch out, man. Watch out, man. Watch out. Right. Because you can't really you don't have time to explain. You don't really want to explain. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, that was it right there. That was the moment right there when I was like, oh, OK, he did have to go boo boo. Like they were saying that he had cramps. It's all kinds of different cramps, baby. Right. Like it ain't just one kind of cramp. I saw one cat had taken a picture and they'd shown that he had a bandage on his left arm that seemed to indicate that it was an IV that he went back and got, so as to relieve the cramps. And I guess that's possible. But you know what else is possible? You can just wrap something around his arm so he wouldn't have to go back out there and tell people that he had to go boo-boo. That's it. Now, the counter argument against him having to go boo-boo is that if it was so bad that he had to boo-boo, that he had to run off the field, he might be faster than we think. And he could get all the way to the back and get to where he needed to, and then actually boo-boo. Like, if it's in an emergency situation where you got to come out of the game, I feel like it would be hard for you to run all the way down the tunnel to get to the time to get your boo-boo on, right? At the same time, like you said, when he got back there, he was like, get out of my way, man. Get out of my way. But he was like, yo, I got to hurry up and get an IV, right? It was a very relatable moment that he had right there in that moment, it seemed to be. That was a wild game, man. Like, when it came to it, because Robert Griffin is hurt, and so they had to bring in Trace McSorley. And, I mean, he's not good, right? There's just kind of no way around that. Like, I see why Baltimore would want to try to give him a run. I remember when he was in college, right? He's just not good. I mean, he was a decent college player, but he's not a good NFL player. And the one play he had that I saw that I thought was good, he threw this out route to Marquise Brown on third down, and Brown just, like, flat out dropped it, right? But you wind up, McSorley gets hurt. Now, fresh off, maybe boo-booing, maybe not. Lamar Jackson runs back off the field. They wind up coming up with the victory. That's a lot going on at one time, man. That's a lot. And see, Lamar, this year has been interesting for me with him because the first game of the season, he picked it up like nothing had changed since last year, right? Like I think it was against the Bengals, I think it was. And they just lit him up, and he looked like the guy in the pocket that we had seen last year. Because like the thing that annoys me the most about Lamar Jackson is when people say he is not a pocket passer. And that's not true, right? Like this isn't a dude that when they need to pass, they have to send him out on a bootleg. Or when he has to pass, they had to send him out on some like obvious sort of play action situation in order to create it. When he's back there, by the way, typically in these like antiquated formations with two tight ends or two running backs or something like that, he's back there standing still. You see his head moving from side to side. All the things that pocket passers do. He just also happens to be really fast. Right? Those two things can exist at the same time. But when it is time to pass from the pocket, he is a man who is capable of passing from the pocket. When it's time to get on the move, he's a dude that's capable of getting on the move. Now, last season, he played unequivocally like the MVP. This year, he has not. Right? There's no way around that. There have been games where he has played well. There have been games where he has played poorly. I think one of the tricky things about evaluating Jackson is we have spent decades saying that a quarterback who runs is not a real quarterback. And therefore, when a dude like Lamar Jackson runs for 124 yards and scores two touchdowns, it's almost like we separate that from his quarterbacking. And we're like, okay, well, that's when he was pretending to be a running back. And so when you start trying to decide whether or not Lamar Jackson has played well as a quarterback, people will have a tendency to push the rushing stuff out of the way and act like that doesn't matter. Act like he's not the centerpiece of the running game. The difference between Lamar and Cam Newton and every other quarterback that I can think of, including Michael Vick, is those two dudes have always been the centerpiece of the running games. Like everything is built off of them. To a degree, that was the case with Vick during the Mora era, right? But they had like Warwick Dunn out there running for 1,400 yards, like a legitimate Pro Bowl running back, like a dude that was that good without Vick being there. You understand what I'm saying? Like, this is different, where Vick was not on every running play at this mesh point of you trying to figure out what in the hell you're going to do with Michael Vick. Like, yeah, there'd be a handoff and a bootleg to the left or whatever it was, but it wasn't the same there. So, like, the effect that Lamar has on the running game is part of his quarterbacking. You can't really divorce that. The other thing about Lamar for me is, even when he's not playing well, I don't feel like there's chaos in his head. Like, I don't feel like he doesn't know what it is that he is going to do. These aren't just like random snap decisions, right? I don't feel like I ever see him panic. And that's a big thing for me with quarterbacks is, if I see you are prone to panic, I am inclined to believe that you are never going to stop panicking, right? Now, you might get better at it, but you're not going to stop. Like, take a guy like Kirk Cousins, for example, who is not the guy he was his first 3 or 4 years in the league, where, I mean, you're basically were getting a couple interceptions every other game. Like, that's what you wound up with. And when that heat come for Kirk Cousins, oh, man, it's freakout time. Okay, Jimmy Garoppolo is another guy who is a panicker. Now, with Cousins, he's gotten better about dealing with the panic. I think he's gotten better at seeing what's coming before it happens and to get himself out of situations where he panics. But he's not the panicker that he was when he started his career. But them moments still come, right? When they get in there and that he comes and there's no telling what in the world he is going to do. I don't ever have that feeling about Lamar Jackson. I do have that feeling about Baker Mayfield. Right. And I think that part of it with Mayfield is size, where once those guys come, he can't see, you know. And so once he can't see, oh, man, what do I do? So I got to find a way to run away from this. He's not a great athlete, so it ain't so much of an okie doke that he can wind up running on you. It becomes panic mode. Right. That's where it is. And the encouraging thing always for me about Jackson is that he is not inclined toward panic. The problem with evaluating him, the difficulty that we wind up with is, who is he throwing the ball to? You know, like, they got Mark Andrews back this week. That was important, right? Like, he looked a lot better having Mark Andrews throw the ball to, because he's the best receiver that they have. I don't think there's any way around that. I also find myself watching a lot of plays that they run where I'm like, yo, why are all the receivers within like 6 yards and inside the tackle box? But Lamar Jackson's standing there. Like, wow, I sure wish somebody was open. That would be really cool. You know, wouldn't that be nifty? Because they ain't got nobody. Hollywood Brown is the one guy that you would hope could go deep on people, but I feel like it ain't been there for him this year, at least in the times when I've watched. He was about what I would have expected from him last year in a positive way, and this year it's been a little bit lesser, right? But I'm going to ask, in the lore of the NFL, are we sure? How many quarterbacks we think could wind up with a boo-boo emergency and then come back out here and then in the first play back, go ahead, get that touchdown, and then bring them back the other way? I'm just kidding. Like, that's an interesting list I'd like to see, right? Like, I always say, the thing that Phillip Rivers does not get enough credit for, and they did not win the game, but they played against an undefeated team in 2007 in the postseason and hung all the way to the end with Phillip Rivers playing on a torn ACL. Is it harder to play on a torn ACL than the bubble guts? Because the torn ACL never forced Phillip Rivers, well, I guess he'd have a hard time running, but it never forced him to run off the field for emergency care. Lamar Jackson had to get all the way out there, because, you know, he had a boo-boo. I'm a little surprised, actually, especially with no fans in the stands. Y'all ain't got no emergency boo-boo situation on the sideline. Like something to make it where I ain't got to run all the way to the back. I feel like the sideline should have like a porta potty, but not like the porta potties that they be having in general admission at the music festivals. I'm talking about the porta potties that they have in the VIP at the music festivals. I understand that I'm speaking from a measure of privilege. I don't know how often you guys have kicked it in the VIP at the music festivals, but I'm just here to tell you, they take better care of you. It's worth the money just for the bathroom, right? Unless you just like to hold your breath, you know, while you relieve yourself. You ain't really got to do that so much in the VIP. They can have one of those. They tend to have nice sinks.
I've used one of those, I think, at like a wedding that someone had on the beach mm-hmm. where they brought it in just for the wedding.
Yeah.
It's basically, it's not a porta potty. It's like yes. a real toilet, but it's just on wheels.
By the way, shout out to your friends for spending the extra money and not going with the porta potty itself. Because like,
yeah.
that'd be real disrespectful to your guest to ask me to put on a suit. And then I got to go in there in a porta potty. That would be the worst. That would
the
be
height
the worst.
Of luxury. Really.
Yes. Yes. There we go. Now, Lamar Jackson, talking about him in the game last night, Gabe. Of course, you know, that prompted a Josh Allen discussion in my mentions on the tweets because it's been a very interesting week as it relates to me and the dude, Josh Allen. Gabe, how many times can I say I don't have a problem with Josh Allen? And these people just all assume that I hate Josh Allen. I say it over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I said it to you the other day, like, it's the mere mention of Josh Allen's name that gets construed as negative because it's you.
Yeah.
And because it's attention. The thing is, though, is like, they want attention on Josh Allen, but they don't want criticism necessarily.
Correct. I said on TV the other day, or Monday, he did not have a good game against the Steelers. And he didn't have a good game against the Steelers. And even the people who were trying to make the argument that he had a good game against the Steelers were hitting me with, well, he was awful in the first half, but then he was good in the second half. So what, the first half don't count, right? The dude had 5.5 yards in attempt on 43 passes, right? He threw an interception, and they're like, well, his arm got hit. Why did his arm get hit? Because that dude does not manage the pocket well unless it's bailout time. Like, that's a difference between him and Lamar Jackson. When those guys come into pocket, if Allen can shake them off because he's so big and strong, he's got something for you. But what you don't tend to see is Josh Allen, like, make that step up in the pocket and then make the play. Like, that's not him. Like, part of his arm getting hit winds up being on him. You know, like, if you get sacked and you fumbled, I blame that on the quarterback. You know, like, it's your job to take care of the ball. And that was an example of a dude not taking care of the ball. That winds up falling on him. But, like, I didn't say he played badly. I didn't say he played terribly. I said he didn't play well. And they're like, well, you know, he did this against the best defense in the league. They lost to Washington last week. The team with a one-legged quarterback. Like, when people make these decisions about who does or does not play well, that's so random. Like, Alex Smith has not played well this year. People know that, right? Like, it's been a bit of a heartwarming story. They've gone off on this winning streak. He has not played well, right? Now, has he played well for a dude with one leg? I mean, certainly, right? Like, has he played well for a starting NFL quarterback? No. Like, I'm not going to pile onto the dude for that, for obvious reasons. It's like a marvel that he's even out there. But they win some games, and then everybody just wants to come up and give the quarterback the credit for whatever's happened with the wins, right? He won the game. He took them down the field. He, like, even people that I know are smarter than that do that. Like, I was on TV with Dan. Dan's like, well, he won the game. What? And the reason I will never let Buffalo fans slide on the idea of he won a game is because y'all ran off the dude that got you to the playoffs for the first time in 18 years. There was never anything about Tyrod Taylor, but hey, he was good enough for us to win the game, right? That did not happen in that case, right? And I've talked about this, and this is where it gets weird when I try to talk about Josh Allen. Race is always a subtext, even if nobody wants to say that it is a subtext. And race is a subtext specifically with the way that Buffalo fans deal with Allen. There's race is a subtext with the way the national guys deal with him also. Again, I've never seen people want it for somebody in the way that Buffalo fans want it for Josh Allen, right? Never seen it. When the offense was in the 20s in DVOA for his first year, and I want to say much of the second year, It didn't matter. Why? Because he wasn't Tyrod Taylor. You know, when he's throwing the ball 10 yards over people's heads, right, throwing it right at defenders, all of these things. All that mattered was, well, what do you think we were supposed to do, stick with Tyrod? Like, I'm not even talking about him, right? And Buffalo fans have to own the fact that they also wanted Tyrod on the bench so bad that they wanted to start Nathan Peterman, the Peter Man, a dude they had not actually seen play football, who might be the worst quarterback any of us have ever seen, and we have all seen Tim Tebow. All right? Peter Man threw 5 interceptions in the first half in his first game as a starter in the NFL. And that was the guy y'all begged for, and the only thing that y'all knew about him was that he was not Tyrod Taylor, who had been to the Pro Bowl 2 years previous. Like, you actually had some receipts on him. He was out there playing with a team that we thought was setting up to tank, that ultimately went to the playoffs, and all you wanted to do was get rid of him. That was it, right? Like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the Lions, who had been terrible for all our lives, and Jim Caldwell's 9-7 just wasn't good enough. Like, what do you think? We should just be satisfied with that? Now, of course, the Bills made a better move. The Bills' move was not to the Matt Patricia quarterbacks. The Bills' move was to Josh Allen, who's been good this year, right? My thing with Allen, and Gabe, you do this podcast with me. You know how I am about quarterbacks. I'm tight. We give it too much credit. And the reason is, being good at quarterback isn't enough. Like, no matter who you are, simply being good is not enough. Any dude that I think is fatally flawed, I'm going to be out here like, yo, that dude had a good game. But if the fatal flaw still exists, and the fatal flaw with Josh Allen is panic. It's still there. It still pops up from time to time. He's still throwing 50-50 balls into double coverage. All of these sorts of things, right? Like Jameis Winston type stuff. He's still good for that. But he is at a point now that when he is on, right? Like, if you give him time, oh man, it's canceled Christmas. If you give him time, and by the way, if you give him time and that time's not enough, he's so big and strong and fast that he will buy time.
Did you see the tweet that Mina had the other day where it said that Josh Allen is like the number one most accurate passer when he's not being pressured? But then when he is being pressured, he goes down to like, I don't know what it is. I think it was like middle of the road or like bottom tier.
Yeah, I did not see that, but that makes sense. Right? That stands to reason. Like, he's getting to the place now where I said last time when he was on with Foxworth, I was like, he ain't really throwing people open. That was a bit unfair. He's doing more of that now. Like, that throw to Diggs at the end of the Arizona game, for example. That was him, like, throwing a guy open. Like, that's a thing that he isn't good at yet that Lamar Jackson is good at. You know? So, like, for example, that fourth down play where Lamar took it outside and started running and then stopped on the dime, you know, and made that pass for the touchdown, that's not a play I think Josh Allen is making. Like, I think when Josh Allen decides he's going to run, he's going to run. If he decides he's going to pass, he's going to pass. He ain't switching off those decisions like hair trigger. That's not where it is. Like, that's why I'd be more inclined to take a guy like Jackson, even though I prefer big-armed quarterbacks. You know, Allen has gotten a lot more accurate. And that's the thing. I did not think a guy could go from being as inaccurate as he was. And even now, I don't think he's, like, crazy accurate. But he's gotten a lot more accurate than he was. I did not think that you could start off as bad as he was at all of those things and wind up at the place where he is, right? So I give him credit for that improvement. I think he has been good. He's probably been one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league this year, right? Like, I think that's fair. If you want to put him higher, like 7 or 8, I think there's something to that too. Like, I just have not gone through all these guys in my head. But no, he's been that dude. They go win the division. That's cool. Y'all don't have to defend him like this, man. Like, again, I've never seen anything like this. And for people who don't know, I do work with a charity called the National Diaper Bank Network. They work to provide diapers. They also provide period supplies for women who need them, right? I do work with them because by giving money to like big, massive operations, you wonder where your money's going. Like with this operation, I feel like I know where my money's going, man. It's going to diapers. You know, these are little things that can make people's lives a lot easier and a lot more convenient and everything else. So whatever. Me and Foxworth did the podcast the other day. Some Bills fan hijacked it, right? Clipped the part to try to make it sound as inflammatory as possible. Bills fans got all mad at every turn, calling me a racist because they can't tell the difference between my voice and Foxworth's, right? Blaming me for everything that Dominique Foxworth said. And I was like, it wasn't me that said it. Oh, yeah, but you was laughing. Well, if you listen to the whole damn podcast, you might understand why I was laughing. Maybe you should consider that, right? But to be honest, I wasn't dealing with our best and our brightest in my mentions. Let's just say that, okay? Cool, whatever. So one Bills fan decided to show Foxworth and me that Bills fans are not a bunch of racists. And I think that we were being particular, Foxworth again was being particular about who he was talking about. But whatever. But to show that Bills fans are not a bunch of racists, they went and found a charity that I was associated with, which is the Diaper Bank Network. And Bills fans up to this point have given over $5,000 to that cause. And I thank you so much for doing that. All right. And I'm not going to lie. You guys are weirdos, right? Like this is a weird thing for you to decide to do. But if your weirdness leads to people getting diapers, I'm all the way for it. I'm down. It is appreciated. Thank you. And if you want to donate, go to the website, ilovejoshallen.com, and you are able to then donate to the cause. Gabe, why are you looking at me like that?
You're not serious. ilovejoshallen.com.
You're on your computer, right?
Yeah, but I'm not trying to screw up this recording.
That's fair. But no, ilovejoshallen.com, because I needed an easy domain that people could remember and then,
oh my,
and then make
God.
A pointer to send it there.
You set it up.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? I needed something easy for people to remember so they could go donate. Because like the page is like donate.diaperbanknetwork.com/, you know what I'm saying? That was too much.
And they give you the ability to customize your own URL.
No, no, no. What I did was I bought the URL and then
you get a redirect.
You set the URL point to the other place. So yeah, ilovejoshallen.com. Y'all can go ahead and do that.
Man, I would have thought that that domain name would have been taken already.
I would have thought so too. But no, there it was. ilovejoshallen.com. And so I set it up and, you know, either way, people have been making these donations and I greatly appreciate the fact that you guys have been making the donations. But y'all got to understand, nobody else is going to love him like y'all do. It's not even a matter of me disliking him. Nobody's going to love him like y'all do. But I mentioned before the subtext of race as it, like, I wind up this morning with people like, well, you're going to say something about Lamar Jackson? You're not going to say anything about Patrick Mahomes throwing 3 interceptions? I'm like, I did say something about Patrick Mahomes throwing 3 interceptions. Well, you're going to talk about how many yards Lamar Jackson averaged in this game? Yeah, 9.6 yards per attempt versus the Josh Allen 5.5. Yeah, I'll do that if that's the game that you guys want to play. But it's just, it's all focused on this one dude. And we went from, as long as it's not Tyrod, to the comparison that Josh Allen people always want to make is to Lamar Jackson. Why aren't you comparing him to Baker Mayfield? Right? Because even though people are critical of Mayfield, the people that are the harshest about Mayfield are not as harsh as the people who are the harshest about Josh Allen. That ain't the direction that people wind up pointing in. That isn't where they go. They all go right to Lamar Jackson. And by the way, it ain't just white folks. Black Bills Mafia act the same as them. I sure hope that the Griselda Records dudes aren't Bills Mafia people. You know how disappointed I would be if Benny the Butcher got on the internet and hit me up talking about, why you so mean to Josh?
Well, with the Lamar Jackson comparison, is that's got to be because they think that Josh Allen is elite, right? And then yes. Lamar Jackson is also elite MVP, young quarterback, you know, yeah. up-and-coming stars. Right. That's it kind of goes back to your argument about there not being any more white, like, young yes. star quarterbacks.
They don't have a white dude to compare to. No, but again, that becomes the subtext. Like, all of that is, and I'm not saying that every Buffalo Bills fan is a racist or everybody that loves Josh Allen is a racist. Obviously, I am not saying that, but I do think that race absolutely fuels your frustration that you had with Tyrod Taylor, because I've seen this happen with black quarterbacks everywhere. Like, this isn't so particular to Buffalo. I've seen this happen to black quarterbacks everywhere. Yes, it is part of the subtext, and I know it's part of the subtext because people assume that my problem with Josh Allen has to do with some tweets that he sent when he was in high school. Now, Gabe, me and you have been doing this show now for what? Almost 3 years. You can vouch for this. If there's anything that I've been consistent about, I do not knock people for high school tweets.
That is correct.
I don't do it. I don't jump in the time machine on people about their tweets. What Josh Allen was when he was 14 or 15, he's 24. I can't draw a line from 15. You can't draw a line from 15 to 17, you know, let alone 15 to 24. I can't do that. I've never, ever done that. But the fact that you assume that my problem with him might be something he said with racial animus when he was 14, again, is your reminder that race is the subtext even if you don't think it's at the top of your mind, race is the subtext in all of this. And that's why I say there ain't so many dudes that's going to be always throwing the ball over people's heads like this cat has, and people just ride with it. It's different, right? But if you want to hear me say Josh Allen's been good this year, I'll say he's been good this year. If you want me to say Josh Allen is good, that takes longer for me to do. And if you want an example, Carson Wentz. You want another example, Jared Goff. We can go up and down the line of guys that we've seen play well at some point, but it doesn't mean right now that you were good. Kyler Murray, who I was in on coming into this year. It ain't really been the same this year, right? I can't say Kyler Murray is good. Joe Burrow, I never got to. Joe Burrow is good. Justin Herbert, it's going to be a while before you hear me say Justin Herbert up and down the line. Josh Allen, once I'm sure that when pressure hits him or the moment is big, well, he's not going to do something that's like dumber than anything I've ever seen before, then maybe we can talk about something. But if on your scouting report is weaknesses, sometimes does the dumbest things I've ever seen. Oh, it's going to take me a little time. Sorry, guys. The University of Florida has a basketball player named Keontae Johnson. I don't follow college basketball in the ways that I used to. I don't know too much about him and his game. I've been told that he is a pretty good player. Keontae Johnson passed out in Florida's game against Florida State on Saturday. Passed out on the floor. They took him out of there and the game kept on going. Now, in football, those things happen. Right, just move a guy to another field, keep it moving. It was a little unsettling to see it happen in basketball because that's a little bit of a different space, right? It felt more cold and callous on a basketball court because I guess I just expect something a little different from a basketball court. I mean, there are players crying on the sidelines and they're like, damn it, we're going to keep on playing this game. And it felt right, you know? And I think that for pretty much anybody who could watch that or did see that, that thing didn't feel right. I guess we kind of heard at first that he was like all right, or they gave us some indication that he was all right. And then they told us he was in the hospital and it was in critical but stable condition. And the most recent report that we have received is that he was in a medically induced coma. Now, I don't know enough about medicine to know just how grave that is. Like, I know damn well it ain't good, right? But I don't, just because they put you in a medically induced coma doesn't mean that like you out of here or something like that. Like, I don't know what could possibly happen on the back end, all those things. I don't know them personally, so I don't want to be alarmist or too dramatic about the fact that this happened, but I also understand that the fact that it happened is not good. You know, we could all agree on that one. I asked a question at the beginning of the college football season, and it was why at the time I did not think there would be a college football season. And my question was, do you have a plan if someone dies? Because if you don't have a plan, if someone dies, then you can't do this, right? Like, that has to be something that you clearly know and understand what you are going to do under those circumstances, because it was quite likely. And at that time, there was some research out that was indicating that it was almost a guarantee that someone would die. Now, that research turned out to be a bit erroneous. And so no one has died. Like, and I'm not saying the research was erroneous because no one has died. I'm just saying, like, they found before that that there was, you know, somebody didn't carry the one somewhere or whatever it was. And the research didn't hold up like we thought it would. What are they going to do if this young man dies? For college basketball, this has demonstrated itself to be a whole nother disaster, right? Like, college football, it's been bad. And it's not just about canceling games. It's not just about all these guys testing positive. Because the thing for me about the guys testing positive is, and why I don't really fault them for playing, I don't know if these guys are testing positive because they're playing football. You know what I mean? Like, they're on campus, right? They're in that environment and everything else. Is football making it more likely that they catch it? Because the research seems to indicate there isn't really much of a transmission rate on the field. Like, it's more likely if you're going to get it, it's happening in the building, right? With guys not wearing masks and stuff like that. But I don't know if playing football is going to make it more likely that you contract COVID-19. So I don't have a problem with them playing on that level, right? The concern that I had and that we had, and this is the one that I guess they just feel like they don't have enough time to account for. The concern is or was, what happens after you've had it? You know, and so with Keyontae Johnson at Florida, a whole bunch of guys at Florida apparently this summer tested positive for COVID-19. The AP reported that Johnson was someone who had tested positive. I don't know if I've seen anything since then that confirmed that he tested positive. So I don't know certainly whether or not this is a COVID situation. But we started the season with an early concern about cardiac issues as it related to COVID-19. Like, that was a big thing, was heart. How was it going? You know, what were the cardiac issues going to be on the, in the aftermath of COVID-19? And now we see a guy pass out in a game, and now he is in a medically induced coma. And the wildest thing in the world to me about this is, this ain't leading the news. Like, somehow this isn't like the first thing that anybody's talking. Every sports center and every show that talks about sports, you need to be hitting us with an update on what's going on with this young man. Right? Especially since it matters in the context of the times. So, Gay, I was about to say you don't remember. Of course you don't remember this. You were not born. Are you familiar with the Hank Gather story?
I'm familiar with the name, but I'm not familiar with the story on the details.
Hank Gathers, he started his college career at USC, and then he and his best friend from Philadelphia, Bo Kimble, transferred to Loyola Marymount. And they were on this team that was coached by Paul Westhead, that scored more points than anybody else, like up and down the floor, shot more threes than anybody else. Like, there was nothing like it, and maybe has never been anything like it in college basketball. Gathers was the leading scorer and rebounder in college basketball. You know, like, he was probably going to be a lottery pick. Like, he was a star. And in a college game where, by the way, Eric Spoelstra was playing on the other team, Gathers passed out, later went into cardiac arrest and died. And it is to this day like the most moving NCAA tournament story, because Loyola Marymount made it to the Elite Eight that year. Gathers was left-handed, and so Bo Kimble, in tribute to him, would shoot his first free throw in the tournament left-handed, and was making them, by the way. Like, this, like, he would have kept doing it if he was missing, you know what I mean? But he was making them. Like, I mean, it was this real big thing. And so Hank Gathers is a name that people my age will remember forever, because that was the story in sports. And then it was the story carrying through the NCAA tournament, but it was all the way out there up front. And so what's wild to me about this is, I almost feel like if this dude had passed out like that and then had to be put into a medically induced coma and there was no COVID-19, we'd be talking about it all the time. Somehow, because there is COVID-19, and maybe because we're overwhelmed by all the news and all these places, this is the most important thing in sports right now. What happens with this dude, right? Because the subtext of everything is COVID-19. Worst case scenario is dying. This guy is in a medically induced coma. This is the sports story of the year. When you really think about it, this is it. And we just kind of whistling and going on about our business. Just kind of acting like it ain't happened. Like, I mean, there's certainly some people who are like on this. Don't get me wrong. But I don't feel like this was the story in the news in the way that it should be. And it bothers me because we reach in to make things news at this point, trying to inflame people in some ways. And I'll give you an example of this. There was a story that was bouncing around, a video bouncing around the internet from last weekend, Texas State High School playoffs, and a young man ran off the sideline, lowered his shoulder, and destroyed an official. It was in a high school game. It was terrible. It was awful. There was no reason for that to be on any of the sports news programs. None whatsoever. And you know why? Because the people that are watching TV about this had no idea that story happened in the first place. They did not need to know that story happened in the first place. But once somebody decided they were going to send that boy to jail or try to get this dude in jail or everything else, now we put it on our news. And what we're doing is inflaming this idea that they're out of control children who are out here running into officials. That's making news. That's an internet story. And the people on the internet can stay up on it if they wanted to. But that is an internet story, okay? This is a sports story. This is central to the foundation and the fundamentals of everything that we are doing. And we ain't really on it. We're not. these COVID numbers are higher than they have ever been. And it's background noise. You know? And it's almost like we all want to report, and I mean the big we, not just sports we, not ESPN we, right? Everybody we. We all want to report nothing that's going to make it to where people got to keep their sorry asses inside, right? Like, we don't want to report nothing that is going to put people in a position where they got to adjust their lifestyles based on the information that they have. People did that once. Y'all have demonstrated that y'all don't want to do it again, okay? I get you. I hear you. That's where y'all are coming from. Yo, like, we getting 250,000 new cases a day. 250,000 new cases a day. That's what we're getting out of this, all right? And we're going to act like this isn't a thing. We're just going to keep on trucking. We're just going to keep on walking. We're just going to go, whatever it is. There's a dude in a medically induced coma right now who plays for a Division I school who might not make it. And you know what we're going to do? Keep on moving and act like it didn't happen. Y'all better act like this is happening, because it might not necessarily be the last one. Then what you going to do? So the Cleveland baseball team will not be called the Indians anymore. It was announced that in 2022, they will have a new mascot for the team. And I mean, obviously, a lot of people look at me for this because at that time I wore that T-shirt that said Caucasians on it on television, right? I've gotten a lot of pats on the back for this. That is very kind of you. I am not the person to pat on the back. I didn't really do nothing, right? And I keep making this point to people. And part of why I think it is important for me to keep making this point is because we got to appreciate the limitations of what we do just because we say something, right? Like the ability to express yourself is a very good thing, and you can do positive things by saying what you feel. You should be able to say the things that you think are important, right? If they are harming no other person, you should be able to do those things. Absolutely. But I think that in our time of the internet, we make too much of things people say as though they really doing something, you know, like there's risk and there's cost to expressing your opinion on controversial topics. So it often requires a certain measure of courage to get out there. And I think that you want to praise that courage when it exists. But I do think we have a whole lot of performance and people saying things because they think it's what they're supposed to say. Right. You know, like I hate people who use the term virtue signaling, but the concept, there's something to it. I don't think there's any denying that part. But I think that people want to feel like they in the action. And I think with social media, as we saw a lot of social movements like Arab Spring, for example, we saw social movements like 10 years ago really get stirred up by what was going on the internet and in social media. And I think as a result, it made people feel like the things they were saying on the internet were more impactful than they actually were. You know, and people feel like, you know what? I need to get on Facebook and say something. I mean, you can if you want to, but you ain't doing shit. Like, overwhelmingly, you're not. And me wearing that T-shirt on television is the same thing. I wasn't trying to say anything, really, to be deep, to be honest, but I didn't change this. That was 2016. That was 4.5 years ago, right? That wasn't the last straw that pushed anything through. That was something that happened one day. It got more attention for me, probably, than it did for the larger cause. And you know why it got more attention for me than it did probably for the larger cause? Because people have been pushing the larger cause for decades. Decades fighting to get this done. I didn't say nothing that you ain't never heard anybody say before. I didn't say anything that people have stopped saying, right? I just did it in a different kind of way. But people have been pushing for this to happen for decades. And the people who put into work for decades to get this to happen, right? The people that were showing up at these stadiums and being harassed and mistreated as they simply requested to be treated with dignity, right? Those are the people that deserve all the credit in the world. And I think that us as a society, we need to be very clear when we start creating heroes that we prioritize the people that are really doing that work on the ground to make these happen, who are very often people that you've never heard of because they might not have a Twitter account or they might not be on TV or anything else, right? Like, those are the people. And for decades, like, Gabe, we talked about this, how your mom went to the Stanford school, right? That used to be the little Indians or whatever it was.
Yeah, Lowell High School in San Francisco is like a prep school for Stanford. And it's like they were the Lowell Indians for the longest time. And my mom thought that they were still the Lowell Indians, but they've been the Lowell Cardinal since Stanford changed their name to the Stanford Cardinal 20, 30 years ago, almost. It seems
It's got to be 40.
Yeah.
I have no personal recollection of the Stanford Indians. I only know the Stanford Cardinal. Like, that's it. Like, there's so many, and we talked about this then, we'll talk about it again. There's so many schools that used to have this Native American imagery that don't. And it's not like they changed it in the last 10 years. Like, some of them have changed in my lifetime. Like, I went, like, all those directional Michigan schools, it used to be the Eastern Michigan Hurons. It was the Central Michigan Chippewas. All of these in all these places, they have changed them. St. John's used to be the Red Men. Miami of Ohio used to be the Red Men. Like, Cleveland and Washington were so far behind the times in doing this. The Braves and the Chiefs and the Blackhawks are so far behind the times. And guess what? They've changed these names at all these places, and I swear to you, nobody cared. In Washington, they changed the name to nothing. Ain't nobody missed a beat, right? Now, maybe it's different because of the quarantine and everything else, so people ain't going to be out there, like, protesting at the stadium or anything like that. But ain't nothing, I mean, they can still go out there. Ain't nobody missed a beat. Nobody's really cared about changing these names. Everybody else can do it. And if you don't think that everybody else can do it, you were saying that you don't even believe your fans love you like that. You think they're going to quit loving you because they changed your name? I thought y'all had built something, you know? But this is what I want to say about the thing in Cleveland. Because, I mean, there's really not that much to say that I haven't been saying for years and that other people haven't been saying for decades. And I try to avoid saying things that I believe to be obvious. Waiting until 2022 to change the name is a terrible idea. You need to do it right now. And look, we saw how fast Washington was able to turn that thing around. Okay? Even if you got to do a year where your team has no name, you have to do it right now. And the reason you have to do it right now is Chief Wahoo does not deserve no farewell tour. And on top of the fact that Chief Wahoo does not deserve no farewell tour, if you give Chief Wahoo a farewell tour, by the time it's over, you're going to probably have people in your stadium. You're probably going to have people in your seats. It is going to look awful for you as you have those people clinging to the idea of being the Indians and clinging to the idea of being Chief Wahoo, right? You are going to build this thing up and you're going to make it harder for yourself to make this move that you need to make, because the only thing that's ever stopped you from making this move is trying not to make the white folks feel bad. The only thing that's ever stopped you from making this move is the fact that white folks don't like anybody telling them what to do. And once they feel like somebody has told them what to do, they're going to push back on it, as was the case with the name Redskins in Washington for all that time. And then the name got changed and nobody cared, in large part because when the name changed, there was no act of force. Okay? You are in a perfect situation right now. If you're the Cleveland baseball team, we can get in here. We can call ourselves the Cleveland baseball team or whatever it is. Just keep it moving immediately, and then we'll figure out a name. But if you let people come out there and keep doing this, and Gabe, they say they're going to keep selling the merchandise.
Well, what's interesting about it is, like, them deciding to not do the same thing and not be like the Cleveland baseball team. Haven't for the last year, haven't they kind of already, like, gone in that direction because they distanced themselves from the Chief Wahoo mascot? And you've been seeing them wear just C on their hats a lot, right? That's like the new logo for them. How much trouble would it really go to just become the Cleveland baseball team when you've got Cleveland on your jersey and then just take Indians off the other one and put Cleveland on it?
Yep, you would think, right? But let me see, then they got a problem though, right? Because they've leaned in on Indians so long. I hadn't thought about this until this very moment. They can't make no throwback money because all their throwbacks are reprehensible. Right. So they say that they say they're going to keep selling from their different names and eras. They're going to keep selling the stuff. Now, part of it, my understanding is that they need to keep the trademarks. Like, if they don't put out a certain amount of stuff, the trademarks wind up lapsing. And then when the trademarks lapse, then other people could, like, flood the streets with Wahoo stuff. Like, I do believe that there is something to that idea. I do think there's that's not a ridiculous thing to be concerned with. But yo, man, y'all can't be out here still selling the Chief Wahoo stuff. Like, you have to keep it completely moving. You can't stop and bask in this. It has to end, and it has to end now. And I'm not even saying that strictly from a moralistic position. I'm saying that from a strategic position. You're going to make this harder if you give these people time to rally and everything else. And the folks that you work so hard to offend are going to be far more offended, right? Like, I'm not saying that you should care that much about what they think. I'm saying you do care about what they think. And since you do care about what they think, make that move right now. Even if you ain't got a name, take forever. Make that move right now. Otherwise, it is most likely to be an embarrassing situation by the time you get to October. All right, it is time for us now to wrap up our baseline series, talking about the prep to pro pipeline in basketball. Another great idea from our man Gabe Bassain. We've had Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports join us in this discussion. We have had Jonathan Gavoni of ESPN join us, Brian Windhorst, and now joining us covering college basketball for us here at ESPN. You can check him out on the radio on the weekends, my man Myron Metcalf. Y'all, man, you in Minneapolis, right?
Yeah.
How cold?
It got down. They said it felt like 9 degrees or something like that yesterday. So
felt like.
Yeah, it's getting down there, whatever that means.
Yeah, man. All right, now you've been around the college basketball world for a while and all of these things. And I think I was actually talking to Jeff Passan about this yesterday. We were talking about college basketball was the most fun for him as a journalist is something to cover, just because the ecosystem that is around college basketball is so insane and so bizarre and has so many different levels. And I said to him that I kind of enjoy the college football thing just because the money transmissions are so absurd and everybody in college basketball is in it for profit. And he said he found it to be a little bit more comforting that people were in it for profit as opposed to just trying to show off, basically. So, like, at this point in time, especially after we just had the FBI stuff and everything else, what's the scene like around college basketball?
When I heard that press conference 3 years ago at the FBI and they said, "We have your playbook," I honestly thought you would see dozens of coaches fired, penalized, and a lot of that could still come. But I didn't think we'd be at this point where, you know, it hadn't really left a major mark. But there's certainly a lot of folks in college basketball who are waiting for the other shoe to drop. They're waiting for the NCAA to finish these investigations. And then you're going to see a lot of programs get hit hard, and they're going to have to make some big decisions about their programs. But other than that, it's still just college basketball. I mean, it's still a lot of the same thing that it was before the FBI.
Do you remember that speech Sean Miller gave at the end of the season last year that sounded like, "Thanks for the memories"?
Yeah.
He back.
That was it. I mean, I was in the press conference, the first one when he came back after the allegations, and it looked like that was it. I mean, I don't know if he coached another game. So Will Wade's still coaching. All these guys have been named.
Auburn out here trying not to tell us nothing at all. Now, one thing I wonder about this is, how is this affecting, like, players and their decisions about what they want to do with school? Like, I remember when O.J. Mayo, when they shut him down over $1,000, right, at USC. And I remember I was talking to Sonny Vaccaro about this. And Sonny's thing was the players see what they're doing to O.J. and they don't like it. And this is turning them away from the operation. But, you know, that's 10, 12 years ago now.
Are there some people maybe who've been rattled by that? Maybe. But for the most part, college basketball is still the main portal for these guys to go from high school to the NBA, still getting most of the best players. Now, that could change. But I think a lot of these guys are using college basketball more than they're allowing college basketball to use them. They're in and out. I mean, a guy like Cade Cunningham is a great example. He comes in. Now, his brother's on the staff, which I'm sure influenced his decision to go. But he comes in knowing that Oklahoma State has a postseason ban. You're not going to play in the NCAA tournament. They're appealing. That could change. But as of now, you don't get to play in the tournament. He still goes to Oklahoma State. You want to know why? Because Cunningham's going to be the number one pick regardless. So I think guys like that, maybe they're disappointed in some of the situations, but it hasn't changed the way that they're using college basketball the way that they should. 6 months, get out, go to the draft, get paid.
Do these guys, like, want to play college basketball? Like, I feel like for previous generations, playing college basketball was, like, in the hierarchy of dreams.
I think you have a generation that is mostly frustrated that they can't go straight from high school to the pros. And then I think you include the NIL stuff. These are, like, really conscious athletes who also have their own brands. I mean, and that's the crazy thing, right? Like, you have a consulting firm said that last year, Duke's players alone could have made about $1.3 million just off social media posts if they would have been allowed to according to the rules. So I think this generation more than anything is like, I'm not getting paid. I can't capitalize on my brand. That to me is the most frustrating part about going to college. But they all still know if I want to be seen, if I want to be recruited, scouted, that's still the best option.
And it's worth noting when you make that point about Duke, none of those dudes are first round picks.
Yeah.
Right. Like we're not like that. That's not Zion, RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish. That's not Okafor, Justice Winslow, Tyus Jones. This is Vernon Carey et al.
Guys like that could make a ton of money. And a lot of these schools are pitching that, like they're selling that on when the NIL rules are official. Here's the kind of money you could make at a place like Duke, at a place like Kansas, Arizona. Like that's certainly something that's becoming a part of the recruiting process.
Now, last season, Emmanuel Quigley was drafted in the first round out of Kentucky. But outside of that, Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, that one dude who was swinging a chair, I think he went in the first round. But those are the programs that have largely gotten these one-and-done players that are going straight to the league. And they didn't have any of them last year. I guess Carolina had Cole Anthony, right? But like all these guys are outside the lottery. Like these are not the guys that we looked at as perhaps being the future stars in the NBA. Like, what do you think that's about?
I think it's just the reality that if you are truly a top 20 player in the upcoming draft, it doesn't really matter where you go. And I think there's also an element of kind of like KD to Texas, my own spotlight. I'm the show. A coach says you can do whatever you want, especially like in positionless basketball. You're seeing a lot of guys like a Cade Cunningham, who's like a 6'8 guard. He wants a coach to say, you get to run point. You get to play sort of this NBA style because that's going to help you at the next level. So if you can go to a team that has that philosophy, people are taking that. Whereas if you go to Kentucky, you're sharing the ball with 6'7 other dudes. Like Cal's not going to let you average 25 a game. It's just his system isn't built that way. So I think that is why you're seeing guys go different places outside the blue bloods in the one and done era.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that part because Krzyzewski absolutely modified his approach, right? And he understands these guys are going to be here for a year. Some of that teach you a lesson type stuff, it ain't going down for him anymore. Roy Williams still doing it. Nassir Little stayed coming. And by the way, should have been coming off the bench last year, but stayed coming off the bench last year. And Cal, as you're right, and I think for him it was because if I'm bringing five of the top 17 players in the league in, then yeah, in the country, then yeah, everybody's going to have to pass the ball. Otherwise, I'm going to have some variety of mutiny. But it does seem like Cunningham going to Oklahoma State, and like you said, there's a factor. Like Michael Porter Jr. going to Missouri, again, there was a family factor that was involved there. But these are still guys going off the beaten path in large part because the show will be theirs.
And I think they're also seeing the reality that, like, how much does it matter if you're at that level where you play between high school and the pros? I mean, you look at this draft. LaMelo Ball would have been great to see him in college basketball. He didn't need it. James Wiseman played three games at Memphis, still a top five pick. Anthony Edwards, you see the way he's built. Yeah, playing at Georgia helped him. There were more eyeballs on him. But if Anthony Edwards had said, I'm going to some academy for the entire year and then I'll just enter the draft, I'm just going to work out, he still would have been a top 10 pick. So more than ever, these guys understand that they're not going to do a lot to hurt their draft stock, no matter where they end up going to play college basketball for 6 months.
The one and done situation. Now, of course, that is not really in the purview of the NCAA, right? Like the NBA decides when they're going to be willing to take the players. People thought that 2021 or 2022 was going to wind up being the year where this changed. Now, nobody seems to think that's going to be the year. Like, what's your read? When do you think that there might be a change in just when guys can go to the NBA?
There was a lot of talk that we see it in the next couple of years. I mean, the whole Bronny storyline, what LeBron has been built on that. Bronny's going to be able to qualify for the draft playing next to LeBron. I don't know if it'll change. Here's the advantage for the NBA. You get to send most of the draft talent through college for a year, and you get to see what you have. You get to see if a player has certain strengths and weaknesses without it costing your franchise anything. And that's still a significant advantage, and it's the reason why we have one and done in the first place. You never saw the NCAA fight that because they were like, yeah, we'll take all these good guys, these great NBA talents for a year, and increase our ratings and all that stuff. And the NBA was like, go ahead, because now we get to scrutinize these guys without taking on anything contractually. So I think the NBA, which has to negotiate this in collective bargaining, let's bring in all these 18-year-olds. Like, I don't know the advantage for the league. So I won't be surprised if this continues for a while.
I also thought that something that got lost in it was not just that you were getting these guys for a year. you're getting these guys for longer than a year, depending on what the circumstances are, right? So, like, I was around North Carolina when Ty Lawson and Wayne Ellington and Brandon Wright all came in the same year, all right? Brandon Wright comes in, and I would imagine that in the absence of one and done at that point, Brandon Wright goes straight to the NBA, and it's probably a top 10 pick, and somebody wishes they hadn't have done that, right? But he went to North Carolina for a year, didn't even want to leave. They basically made him leave. Like, he left without signing with an agent because he did not really want to go, right? Wayne Ellington, who was a top 10 player on that class, stayed for 3 years. That one was a little less surprising. But Ty Lawson, who never wanted to spend a moment in a classroom that he did not ever have to spend in his life, stayed 3 years when nobody ever thought that he would stay for more than one. Ever did.
These college coaches, that's their goal. That's their hope, is that you end up getting some of these guys for more than a year. I mean, you've seen a number of college coaches get behind the idea of, if you come, you got to stay for 2 years. They want sort of a baseball style system because they want to hold on to these guys as long as possible. The guys that are really at that level, I'm talking about the guys who, the Amani Bateses, the Cade Cunninghams, they're right. Pros. It's not going to matter a whole lot kind of what you do at the next level. So you have college coaches who are saying, hey, man, we know you're only going to be here for a year. Like, you can't go to a Cade Cunningham and say, hey, man, maybe you'll be here for 3 years. Like, that's not going to work. You can't go to Amani Bates and say, hey, maybe you're going to stick around for 2 years. You got to go to guys like that and say, we know you're here just for a showcase, 1 year. We're going to put the ball in your hands. Help us win.
Yeah, and that's why, like, the McCourt Maker story is so interesting to me, because I think people misunderstand what five-star recruit means a lot of things in basketball, right? Like, that's basically the top 30 players in the class. The difference between the number one player in a class and the number 10 player in a class tends to be pretty big. And the difference between number 10 and number 30, like, tends to be really, really big. And I thought that he was a guy, it did matter where he went. Like, I understood the feel-good element of him going to a black school and everything else, but that doesn't seem to be working the way that I think he or anybody else had really envisioned it, even though it's been a predictable outcome.
Yeah, my concern with that move, like, my whole concern when I thought about it when he signed, I'm like, okay, who's going to be there with this young man when it doesn't work out, if it doesn't work out? I mean, the biggest challenge is he's out of the mix. I mean, he's been sidelined with an injury. He's not playing on TV. He's not getting the exposure that a lot of these guys get. And you're right. Five-star in college basketball means a lot of things, right? But there should be, like, a distinction where, forget five-star. Like, to me, I pay attention to guys where if you don't have to know how many stars they have, that's probably a pro. Like, Cade Cunningham, what is he? Yeah, he's a five-star, but that dude's a pro. And right. There aren't many guys in that group of 30 that right now you're like, he's a pro. And that's what puts a lot of guys like Maker in a bad spot. Because all of a sudden, if he has to come back, now it looks like he's failed or he's a bust. When in actuality, he just needs more time to develop, and he probably needs to be in a program that can help him do that.
And I think that people misunderstand how many of these dudes really are, like, one-and-done players.
Yeah.
There aren't that many of them per class. Like, legitimate. There's going to be guys who do it, obviously, right? But, like, legitimate one-and-done players. This is what, maybe 7 or 8 per class?
8 to 10, I would say, you know? And then you got to think the draft is not 20 years ago. 8 to 10 international guys are going to be right. In that mix. There's not many spots for one-and-dones in the first round of the draft.
Yeah. Well, like, even if you think about a guy like R.J. Barrett, for example. That was a dude who needed to play another year of college basketball. Like, he was capable of playing in the NBA, but that dude wasn't no, like, NBA player.
RJ was going to be RJ. And I think that's a lot of time when we talk about, like, who should leave and who should go. Some of these guys already have a certain identity and personality, and they're going to play that way. Like, RJ was going to be RJ. You were going to have to deal with a guy who would be aggressive trying to get to the rim, but wasn't going to be a great shooter consistently in a league that demands that. I don't know if that changes from year one to year two with a dude like RJ. Like, maybe he just is who he is. And that's why I try to get away from the conversation about bad decisions, because some of these guys are just locked into a certain identity, and you either take them or leave them. And it doesn't matter if they leave after their freshman year or their junior year, those flaws are still going to be there.
Yeah, like, this is, my thing obviously is, you know, get that, like, whatever the play is to maximize your long-term bread, go ahead and do that, which is very often getting out of college before you can get hurt.
Yes, yeah, because then you're done if that situation happens.
The agent game these days, has anything changed? Is it still as comical as it's always been?
You know, it's interesting to hear sort of the conversation moving toward the NCAA sort of more embracing this idea And I cover Reebok ABCD camp back in like 04. And like Greg Oden was there, like a whole bunch of talented dudes. And I remember just how they had agents in like a blocked off section in the bleachers. And they had like coaches in a blocked off section. It was like, don't leave your seat, you know, stay away from agents. But now we're obviously moving toward a situation where the biggest thing to me with agents is going to be what the NCAA does once they pass these NIL rules and what sort of access these guys are going to have to marketing agents, because you would think they would need them. But I don't think the game has changed in terms of agents trying to get the most out of a client, sometimes advising guys to make the wrong decisions. But for the most part, I don't know that it's anybody's fault when a guy doesn't get drafted or falls to the second round. I think that's just where he was probably going to end up at any point, no matter who advised.
Yeah, my thing for agents is these guys actually need agents, right? But the current situation makes it like so hard to vet like an agent. Like, look, you and I are grown men, right? We work in a situation or in a space where you need to have an agent.
Yeah.
I believe you and I have talked about an agent before, we right? Because how in the world do you figure out who your agent is, right? Like all of a sudden you do a job and you pop up and people are like, hey, I want to be your agent. I don't know anything about vetting that. What am I supposed to do? Put you in Yelp, you know, and then go figure it out? Like, that's not, it's such a tricky thing, but you need somebody like this in the game, right? So like I could come, you can ask me, I can ask you about an agent. Like, oh, I hear you know this guy. What you got? If you're a 15, 16 year old dude, or you know, 18, 19, whatever the space is, it's really not that simple. And so on one level, you got these dudes, a lot of agents are really out here trying to help these cats out, right? Like that's the whole reason they end the game. And then this cat is just in there to get that bread and they're going to be who they are. How are you supposed to tell the difference between them? And you would be able to if this stuff was over the table, right? Once it's under the table, it becomes too slick. When it was, oh, if it was over the table and you could go to your athletic department and be like, hey, I've been hearing from this dude. What do you know about him? It would be so much better, you would think.
Yeah. And I think we're headed toward that because between name, image, and likeness, potentially this, the rules changing for one and done, I think we're headed to that. It is difficult for a 17, 18-year-old. And really, I meet a lot of families, man, that have never been through this process. Like, they don't know anything about, you know, the NBA or even, like, playing elite college basketball. Like, what people don't realize is for a lot of these dudes, they were 16 years old and nobody really cared, right? Maybe they had a little interest. All of a sudden, they grew 5 inches. And at 17, they have an offer from every major school in America. They're on mock draft boards. And that family goes from thinking junior might have an opportunity to play D1 to starting to think about what could happen in the next 1 to 3 years and how much that could change everybody's life. And then there's a lot of really difficult decisions for these guys to make. There should be more of an open pipeline between the NBA and NCAA to facilitate that for sure.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I feel like I peeped. It's kind of small sample, but I feel like I peeped it, and I wonder if you've seen the same thing. So if you got a family that's got a kid that's a good basketball player, right, and he goes through the process and all this, winds up at a school, but then they got kid number two, and kid number two is better than kid number one. After they have seen that process with kid number one, oh, it's a whole different ball game with how they play with kid number two, right? There are no babes in the woods anymore. They're going to get this money on kid number two.
Yeah, you see that a lot. And more power to those families, because that should be the way it is, you know? That should be the game, because everybody else is trying to get their piece. Like, we don't care when a college basketball coach gets $8 million, $7 million. Like, nobody cares about an athletic director making $1 million. Strength coaches making almost $1 million. Like, nobody cares. But as soon as athletes and their families start to say, hey, can I be involved? I demand a cut of that too. Everybody goes, oh, look at these helicopter parents trying to control their children's lives, trying to be involved. And it's like, well, everybody else has been doing this forever in college basketball. But I think that's what is about to change between name, image, and likeness, and not even just draft rules. Some of these guys are going to go to the G League. Some of them are going to go overseas and say, forget college basketball. And I think that'll force the NCAA to really take a hard look at itself and try to figure out what it wants to be in the future. Because you're going to lose more and more of the best players because of some of the issues you talk about.
Look, man, people expect all the black people to work for free, right? No, and when I say that, I'm serious, and this is what I mean, because I think some people, you know what they're gonna think. But here's why I say that. Clearly, if a guy is professional ready at 19 years old, then there is a value to the development that he received along the way. Everybody who does the along the way development is expected to be in it for the love of the game, right? And those tend to be the black folks, right? The AAU coaches, the parents, all of this stuff. They're expected to be in it for the love of the game, and they should not try to get paid. Everybody else is supposed to try to get paid. Like, their purpose in the ecosystem, in the minds of people, is that their whole purpose is that they are supposed to get paid. But everybody else that's below that step, they're supposed to be in it for charity. And part of why, and this is where I think it gets a little weird, I'm curious your thoughts on it. If you're a high school coach, you're not there to coach the best player. You're there to coach the seventh best player. You know what I mean? Like, the seventh best player is representative of what the actual purpose of the high school coach is. This other player is an anomaly, right? Now, if you talk about somebody like IMG or O'Kill, yeah, we talk about something else. But this guy is an anomaly. But even at IMG, the starters are cold as hell. The next level are just kids that go to IMG. You know what I mean? And so, like, but this high school coach, he is in it for the love of the game by and large, but then he gets the really good player and he's like, yo, I'm going to work with you and I'm going to make you the best that you can be. Okay, cool. And then somebody else is supposed to get rich.
Yeah.
You know, the AAU coach, the same way. I'm supposed to stop this boy from joining a gang. I mean, not all of them, but you know what I mean? Like, yo, you know how hard it is to stop a kid from joining a gang?
Crazy.
And I'm supposed to do it for free?
And a lot of times when those guys say, hey, wait a minute, I want to have a voice, they're sort of viewed as the dirty AAU coach. You hear a lot of that. Yep. You know what I mean? You hear a lot of the parent who's trying to get a cut, you know, poor families, black kids, right? It's always the same group of, okay, of course they're trying to get something in all this. But no one ever looks the other way and goes, well, what are these colleges trying to get? Like, how many jerseys are Oklahoma State selling right now because of Cade Cunningham? Like, how many people now in the normal times, if we had fans,
right,
like, how many fans would be there just to see Cade Cunningham? But under the current rules of Cade Cunningham, said, you know what? I want to sign autographs after this game where I just had 40 points and make $5,000. NCAA says, nope, can't do it. Right. Not going to work. But if his coach, who is coach, is a good dude, writes a book about coaching Cade Cunningham for the year and sells 1 million copies, everybody's okay with that.
Yep.
Like, that's why I think more and more the Cade Cunninghams of the world are going to exit college basketball. And it may be the G League. It may be overseas. It might be, hey, Nike, I'm going to be the number one pick. Put me with some dudes who can work me out and get me ready for the draft so I can still be a top three pick. But they're going to lose those guys because they're not going to accept the fact that they can't capitalize on what they're worth. And they want those people around them to capitalize too.
By the way, this got to be the year that it absolutely stinks to be a college basketball star. And I say that for this reason, right? The number one selling point, if I am a college, so I'm trying to get somebody to go to college, right? Not go to G League. My number one selling point, like, Myron, where'd you go to college?
Minnesota State Mankato, D2 school, where the Vikings have their training camp.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Now, this might not apply to you the same way it applied to me because I went to college in Atlanta. But the number one selling point, I did not go there for the academics. I did not go there for no history. I didn't go there for no tradition. I wasn't trying to – none of that. I went there because I walked around that yard one time in November of 1996, and my neck broke so many times that I was like, there's no way in the world that I am going to college anywhere else. Right? Like, all these other players, they can get you ready for the league, but I can't imagine how much fun it is to be one of them dudes in college for that 1 year. And now you got me down here during Cootie Fest, because that is what the G League can't give you. Like, you go to the bar and be like, hey, baby, I'm in the G League. That ain't getting you nowhere. You walk around the yard and be like, yo, I'm Cade Cunningham. Oh, it's a party everywhere I go.
It's different. Yeah, I mean, being quarantined in your room after games is a different... For the ones who are following the rules, I don't know how many people actually do it.
Don't get me wrong. You know? That's the worst judgment age in the world. Yeah. Like, they still do it a little living, but that's the one thing that college has that nobody else has, is there is no better place socially for you to be when you are 18 years old than on a college campus, period. And they can't even really offer that this year.
It's problematic. I mean, it's a challenge because you're right. I mean, getting that opportunity. And we talk about, like, McCourt Maker. I think that was a big part of why he went. to Howard, you know, in the idea of what it would mean to be a big star on that campus. But I feel for all these folks who are not being able to enjoy it to the degree that we were able to enjoy it. Whew. But I also just think they're more conscious than like a past generation of athletes. And, you know, if you've got this sort of brand already, and social media has changed the game. If you know you got a million followers, like a million people who follow you, and there's a way to monetize that, and you're going to go to a school that's going to tell you you can't do that, like that to me is going to make it so the Cade Cunninghams of the future go, I'm out. And Cade Cunningham, honestly, probably is only at Oklahoma State because he had a commitment to that coach and he had a commitment to his brother, you know? And I think if you don't have those things, it'd be a different situation for Cade Cunningham. He wouldn't play college basketball, I don't think.
All right, man. That is my man, Myron Metcalf. Check him out all over the ESPN platform. Check him on the radio. Check him at ESPN.com. I appreciate you joining us on this series, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you again to Myron Metcalf and everyone who joined us for our baseline series on the Prep to Pro pipeline in basketball. Be sure to check that out. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.